Entwined is a podcast about how so much of the world around us is wound or twisted together. This podcast strives to bear unexposed or indiscernible connections using historical and anecdotal sources. I am P.S. McKay, and alongside Elliot Gladstone, this is Entwined. I always liked the idea of a convergence. It has a lot of range, but it's the little day-to-day things that intrigue me. Like when you suddenly are reminded of an old jingle from a commercial, like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? And then, 3 days later, a friend of yours quotes that exact same commercial, counting 1, 2, 3. And that is a totally unsolicited reference. You never mentioned it, they never mentioned it before that moment, and yet somehow, nature, the universe, set things in motion where two people who had no interaction at all suddenly had a connection. A random connection that, by all circumstances, should never have occurred. A convergence. I'm sure you have all experienced it one way or the other. Maybe you were humming a song in your head and your partner starts singing the corresponding lyrics. Convergences were once celebrated in society. Celebrated with a respect and, many times, a fear. Halloween, the one that we celebrate today, is a product of such a celebration. Halloween, All Hallows Eve, Samhain, and following the Day of the Dead are all part of a moment in society where we celebrated a convergence. A moment in the year where our world, our nature, combined with the world of the dead. It was a moment to be respected and feared at the same time. Jack-o'-lanterns are the modern product of our ancestors creating talismans or guards to ward away the dead. It was also a moment to reckon the fact that maybe a loved one lost so long ago may be coming back to visit you from the dark, lost land. Imagine in those times, days where we had no way to know how one got a cold, what a cold really was, or why the moon would turn red on random nights periodically every few years. We have science now to explain this and guide us, but back then? These people were no different from us now. If you somehow took one and brought them to the present as a baby, they would develop as any other modern child would. Civilization is much younger than evolution. It was a time of fear and worry, and we created stories to make sense of all these incidents. And somehow, Halloween developed across many cultures as that of a night when the dead would come to our world to haunt or heal us, whatever it was that kept the idea going through civilization. We know now, as science stands, that such a convergence does not exist. There's no evidence of the dead walking among the living, despite your current television programming. It was all a fabrication that settled into the natural zeitgeist of our development and turned into a moment more about a night for candy and tricks. And with the dawn of science, the idea of magic has gone the same way. Where once shamans and witches were to be feared and respected, those that practice magic now are nothing more than party entertainers. For the lucky ones, they can go so far as to tricking a nation as to thinking that they can fly clear across the Grand Canyon. But the audience is more sophisticated now. They know the magician carries no such powers or abilities. It's nothing more than a trick that can be explained with logic and hidden pulleys. It's fun to be deceived, especially when you pay for the chance and knowing what you're getting yourself into. And so it goes for many aspiring magicians. Growing up, finding the way that they garner the center of attention is to use a simple card trick. Which brings me to Joe Burris. There's nothing remarkable about this man. He found a love of showmanship by honing his talents and performing magic tricks to an audience who wanted nothing more than to have fun. At some point, Joe decided that he would perform escape acts. You know, the kind that would put you upside down, underwater, while wearing a straitjacket. I had heard that's how Houdini died when I was young and growing up. Joe Burris was up and coming and thrived on the attention that audiences gave him. One will have to wonder why some who was successful in magic decides to randomly become an escape artist. It's almost like changing professions, and first you're an actor and then you decide to become a stunt artist. It doesn't really go that way very often. Yet Joe lived up to his name, the Amazing Joe. He successfully was able to escape a coffin buried under 3 feet of dirt and an additional 4 feet of wet concrete in a show in the Midwest. It resonated a certain notoriety for him. At last, he was on his way up that chain, performing what appeared to be the impossible and escaping with his life intact. After that successful stunt, he decided to do so again, this time 6 weeks later at a small family amusement park called Blackbeard's in Fresno, California. He had a crowd of 150 people that included his wife and children. There were construction crews and even police to monitor the event. A local news team was there to document it and would later be broadcast on the news. With great fanfare, dressed and shaved as someone transported directly from the 1920s, Joe Burris laid himself down into a clear plexiglass coffin. Even with the lid sealed tightly shut, he was clearly able to view everything as he was lowered into that 7-foot hole. The audience was rumbling while several crew members started to shovel dirt onto the coffin, eventually blocking out the last of the bright floodlights that lit the area for Amazing Joe and his fans. Then the concrete came. It was a slow pour, nothing special. The idea was to have that layer finish off even and flush with the rest of the ground. A reporter even asked him before the stunt if he knew that concrete hardens at the bottom and moves upwards, so his hardest fight was going to be right when he got out of the coffin. Joe laughed it off, advising he didn't know that, and it didn't matter. He pulled the same stunt off, and that simple matter of physics didn't happen. He was right, it didn't matter. At least that part of the physical property of concrete. The part he didn't take into account was weight. The cubic mass of all that concrete weighed 7 to 9 tons. The plexiglass cover that Joe used to protect him? Less than an inch. When the pour was almost completed and the concrete was almost flush with the ground, a sudden suction happened. All that concrete dropped into that hole a good 18 inches. And despite the quick-acting crew and the attempts to dig a parallel hole to get him out, Joe Burris, the Amazing Joe, died from asphyxiation on October 31st, 1990. The question could be asked why he didn't die when he performed the same stunt just 6 weeks before. Well, the first time he had a reinforced concrete lid, which was able to withstand the increased weight of the wet concrete as it poured down upon him. This gave him that chance to maneuver and get out. It's not been explained why he went without the reinforcement the second time around. Perhaps it was showmanship, a kind of invincibility that energized him. Perhaps he just wanted to push the envelope. Or it could be so mundane as to the idea that maybe the manufacturer didn't have materials available to reinforce it in the first place for that fateful night in Fresno. Whatever the reasoning, it occurred. And a man searching and reaching for a dream died, doing just that, and became more famous after his death than he may have ever had while he was alive. And so a man who gained notoriety performing a sort of magic to entertain audiences became the victim of the cold, hard science that his act openly tried to mock. It was physics that killed Mr. Burris, not magic. It should be noted that Houdini was one of Joe's heroes. Not surprising when you look at his career. Houdini was a great illusionist, an escape artist, and also a fighter against mysticism fraud. He hated the idea that people would claim to be able to talk to the dead and charge grieving family members for the opportunity to speak to them. It brings a certain honesty and morality to a man who, in fact, made money in illusions and trickery. And Houdini did the buried alive act 3 separate times only. He deemed it a bit too dangerous to do on a regular basis, especially after the first time, barely escaping, as his hand broke the surface, only to be pulled out by his assistants. But it wasn't the escape act that killed him, like I thought it did when I was growing up. No. One night in his green room, a man came to him and punched him multiple times in the abdomen, supposedly challenging the idea that Houdini never felt pain. It was never confirmed that this happened, but it is a widely accepted thought. Houdini died in 1926 from this blunt force attack some days later. His last words? I'm tired of fighting. So we've discussed Joe Burris, the magician and escape artist who died while performing an escape act that Houdini, whom he idolized, would never have attempted. Houdini, rumored to have died during an escape act, died in a senseless act of violence. But there is a small link, and not much to take from it by itself, but a convergence happened. Both died on Halloween night, 64 years apart. They both died on Samhain, All Hallows Eve, the night before the Day of the Dead. In an era where science rules, and these two men who died all too young in and of themselves, whose entire lifestyle was to entertain under the auspices of magic and trick, where we know the land of the dead and the living would never actually meet. It did. And I can only wonder when the next convergence I experience, be it a simple song, movie line, or shared experience, is this the work of worlds colliding? Is there really a momentum in nature that makes this happen? Or is a convergence really just a product of crazy, random happenstance? 1, 2, 3. Thank you for listening. Entwined is a podcast that releases every other week and is written, recorded, and produced by P.S. McKay and Elia Gladstone. This episode was written by P.S. McKay. Please tune in next time to see what Elia Gladstone has in store for us. For more information about the show or the authors, please check out entwinedpodcast.com or visit our Twitter page at entwinedpodcast.